Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left at Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
Aces.
We've been
all four of them.
We've been talking about me being out of the restaurant a little bit recently.
Yeah, you like to party. What could I tell you?
No, I've been doing good works. I went like Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa with cocktails.
This weekend I got to do some fun stuff with you too, Museum of the Cocktail and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But last week I went out and I volunteered for the Share Our Strength tasting, the SOS
mm-hmm.
tasting.
You were guest sommelier.
I was a volunteer sommelier mm-hmm. for this big food and wine event. $325 a person to walk in the door, you know,
wow.
And it was like Tom Colicchio is there slicing Wagyu beef. That's the caliber of event it was. And I was very impressed with it. And these events, really, to make them come off well,
mm-hmm.
really takes a lot of work, because and I'll be honest.
You mean organizationally?
Yes, and I think that most of these events don't come off very well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't enjoy most of these events because most often when you have a big tray of food
mm-hmm.
that, you know, 37 restaurants bring a big tray of food that isn't anything like the food they serve in their restaurant, because
right.
that doesn't travel well, and you eat it off a paper plate, it's a problem.
We talked about this a long, long time ago on a show a long time ago, but I always thought that it was peculiar that a restaurant would go do one of these events,
mm-hmm.
bring, okay, now you're donating the food, you're mm-hmm. donating your time, you're putting all this out there, you're putting a lot of resources into an event like this usually,
mm-hmm.
and then skimp on the food and do something that is either not representative of your restaurant or not representative of the quality of a restaurant, bring something that actually isn't very good.
Tom Colicchio with a big hunk, with 100 pounds of hunk of Wagyu beef slicing off to order?
That's not what I'm talking about.
Right, right.
Okay, I'm talking about the guy who serves you the little thing on the nacho chip
right.
and says, you know...
Unless he made the nacho chip.
Huevos Rancheros nacho. Here you go.
You're exaggerating a little.
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
For some of the event, some of the food at some of these events. And I always think to myself...
Why do I need another quiche tart?
Do a few fewer of these and make them really special.
Yes.
Make them a showcase for your restaurant.
Sure.
Make them a place where you can shine, where you can show the best of what you do, and maybe do bring in a few extra customers and spend a little extra money on this event, because you're already invested with the labor, you're already invested with the food, you're already invested with the time. So if you're going to do all that, do it right.
Well, anyway, the event, I agree with you completely. In this event, everybody did that. Everybody
mm-hmm.
pulled out their best. I mean, Tribeca Grill made little pastries, and like I said, Tom Colicchio was there cutting a big piece of Wagyu beef. And
mm-hmm. Wagyu, just for everybody who doesn't know, Wagyu is the breed of cow that is Kobe beef.
And it's the best beef.
So if it comes from Kobe, Japan, it's Kobe. If we grow it here in this country, it's the same breed of cow, and usually we treat it very specially, and it's called Wagyu.
Alain Ducasse was there serving a little bit of foie gras.
A little
that
bit.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, I bet it was marvelous.
And, you know, the thing about when they do the events right like this, I mean, Fred Price is the guy who did the wine program, and he's a very serious wine guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was Rocco di Spiritu sommelier. He was at the Rainbow Room.
He
was at Union Pacific. Mm-hmm. He was at the Windows in the World. Was he at Windows? Yeah, he was at Windows in the World. And what he did was he got all of his friends. So the sommeliers were, you know, Lee Campbell from Harlem Wine and Spirits,
mm-hmm.
Myself.
So yeah, big time.
Yeah, big time. But we're the guys pouring the wine at these things. We really
mm-hmm.
knew what we were talking about, you
mm-hmm.
know. And then you had the people from the wineries come. So it was a great event, and I really enjoyed it. But what was very interesting, just to show you the ascendancy of cocktails, the most exciting thing I think at this whole event was the cocktail section.
Better than the Wagyu beef?
Yeah, it
really?
Was amazing. You had Audrey Saunders there. Who owns the Pegu
Club? Pegu
Club,
and we've heard us talk about it as the best
cocktail place
in
the Northeast. So, and America, as far as we know. She was making Ramos Fizzes, an old cocktail that she found, an old cocktail book from 1951 called The Last Word, and she was making Aviation Cocktails, another old cocktail. We make Ramos Fizzes and Aviation Cocktails at Catherine Lombardi, but we're the only place in Jersey you can buy them.
Yeah.
But they were beautiful, made to order. You had the people from the Flatiron Lounge, which is another real serious cocktail
really hot cocktail place as well.
Those two places brought their own cold draft ice cubes from their places to make these cocktails.
We've talked about ice before, too. Ice is so, so important to making drinks. And everybody uses these little half moons that melt too fast and water down drinks and don't make them taste good. Those one inch by one inch cubes.
Oh, my, aren't we cute. Which is one of the few times where most people, if they're making cocktails at home, you have an advantage over a bar because you have better ice.
Yep.
Your ice and those little things you get in the automatic ice machine aren't so good, but they're okay. They're better than restaurant ice in most cases, but those cubes from an ice cube tray are the best for making cocktails. So, hey, listen, but I want to point out presentation on these things. People have to be really careful about presentation on these things. You had these amazing cocktailians making cocktails, right? To order, talking to people about them, very knowledgeable about them. And it was a great way to promote their places because I don't think everybody knows about the Pegu Club, and everybody should.
Right.
But
Pegu's kind of a weird, hard-to-find place. It's
on Houston Street.
It's up on the second floor, and it's
awesome.
It's kind of hard. I agree. I love the place, but if you would walk past it 1,000 times and not know it was there.
But I just want to put the comparison. The Beef Eater girls were there.
There's like 25 jokes there. And I'm not... you guys, make up your own jokes for that one, okay?
The Beef Eater girls all pretty much were blonde and had the same haircut. No, not exactly. There were different kinds. But there were like
and
five...
And they wore the same outfit and they did the can-can together.
There were five blondes with the same...
Look,
yeah. And there were, you know, four other people who had a similar look.
They looked like the Robert Palmer Addicted to Love.
And I talked to them about gin a little bit. What's a juniper? Okay, gin, just so you know, is flavored with juniper. But they were spokesmodels.
But they were the spokespeople for gin, for the gin.
And
they should
know. Right, and they were the spokesmodels. They didn't know anything. And then they shook up Beef Eater Martinis. Chilled and Beef Eater Martini, poured it out on a tray, and they took Beef Eater on the rocks, or Beef Eater Martini, or some Beef Eater based liquor, all liquor drink, put it on the rocks, put them on a tray, and then they had the spokesmodels walk around with them. Except that they would sit there for a long time, because they always wanted to have them made. And so what you got was a warm up martini,
or a watered down rocks martini.
And
by the way, Francis and I don't have anything against Beef Eater.
But Beef Eater and water, room temperature, is not my favorite drink.
You know, Beef Eater's a good, solid gin that we use in the restaurant all the time.
I want to tell you, this is not an attack on Beef Eater, because I think Beef Eater is a very good gin.
Yeah.
And in our classic cocktails, we specify for the house, we don't have like a house gin, but for certain cocktails we use Beef Eater, for certain cocktails we use Tanqueray, for certain cocktails we use Juniper, and that's called for in our recipes.
We're looking for different aromatics depending on the cocktail.
But what's unfortunate is that sometimes with the big companies, they should pay more attention. They should hire us, or hire Audrey Saunders, or hire Julie from the Flatiron Lounge, or hire Dale DeGroff, to take it out to the end. Here you took this very lovely gin.
You know what, though? I think that more people want to look at the hot model than want
to
look at the big, fat Mark and Francis, and to be able to talk about Beef Eater Gin.
But my advice would not be to fire the hot model.
Keep the hot model. There you go.
What I want, Mark? I want a hot model and cold gin.
You want a hot model on a car with the water hose.
You can serve it in a bikini and be hot, but just make the gin right. And listen, again, I want to stress, that's no shot on Beef Eater. Beef Eater is a very good gin, and they were giving away their stuff to help charity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a shot on them at all. But I guess the lesson to be learned for us in the business is, if you're doing it in your own place or if you're doing it off-site, somebody super competent has to be there and see it through to the end product.
Yep.
Because you can get it 99% of the way there, and if the waiter drops it on the floor, the waiter drops it on the floor. All right, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Maya Van Rossum. She has been the Delaware Riverkeeper and leader for Delaware Riverkeeper Network since 1996.
Maya, hi, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, I have my very first question is a really easy one. What's a riverkeeper?
Well, my official job description is that I am to be the voice for the Delaware River. And essentially what that means is I go out there into the world and I speak on behalf of the Delaware River and all of the streams that feed it and the watershed that supports it. I fight bad things, things that people want to do that would harm the river, and I support good things, things that people would want to do that would help the river.
Now,
everybody in the world wants to do exactly that, support good things and fight bad things.
I disagree.
You're right. Everybody should want to do that.
I disagree. But so now what is the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, and who appoints you Riverkeeper?
Well, the Delaware Riverkeeper Network is the organization that supports me in my efforts, and it's a group of staff members and scientists, experts, and members and volunteers that all work with me in accomplishing the goal of being the voice for the river. Because the watershed includes portions of four states, over 13,000 square miles. The river, the main stem river itself, is over 330 miles long. So you can imagine protecting the river is not really the job for one person.
Right.
The Delaware Riverkeeper Network is a compilation of literally thousands upon thousands of people throughout the watershed that are all helping to accomplish this important goal of protecting the river and the streams that feed it.
Now, who funds this?
It's funded primarily by private donations and grants from foundations.
Well, what is the state of the Delaware River?
Well, it depends on what angle you're looking at it from. There was a time when the Delaware River was so polluted that the shad, which are ecologically very important to the river, mm-hmm. couldn't migrate up the Delaware because there was a 20-mile oxygen dead zone in the Philadelphia-Camden reach of the river.
Mm-hmm.
That has now been cleaned up, and while you have an oxygen sag, you no longer have a section of the river totally devoid of oxygen, and the fish are able to migrate up. But that's one problem that's been cleaned up. There are tremendous other problems, including toxic pollution, that are actually getting worse for our river and the communities that depend upon it.
And one of the things that we touch upon on occasion on this show, Maya, and I think you just hit upon it, when you're talking about the condition of a river, it's not just the river that's in that, you know, over by the Delaware water gap where it's beautiful and serene and everything's calm and looks perfect. It's the entire length of the river, because it's a whole ecosystem and a lot of fish and birds and are migrating up and down that whole river area.
Absolutely. The health of the main stem Delaware River is dictated by the health of the streams and the watershed that feed it.
So
as you said, you can't just look at one section. You have to look, in fact, at the entire watershed, not just the entire river.
And, you know, around the springtime of year, we have in Lambertville, New Jersey, we have the Shad Festival, which is when we celebrate when the shad come up the river. Well, you know, if the river's polluted, you ain't going to get no shad. Now, we have a situation where there are advisories on the fish that you can eat, even in what looks like very pretty water where there are fish. There are recommendations that people either from certain places don't eat any fish or limit their intake of fin fish. What's that all about, and why is that?
Well, unfortunately, as I talked about, the river suffers literally thousands upon thousands of insults every day. And one of the categories of insults that the Delaware River suffers from is introduction of a variety of toxic pollutants into the river, things like PCBs, DDT, mercury, all sorts of very dangerous contaminants. They go into the river system, and then they get absorbed by the critters, including the people, that rely on the river water. Fish, there are a number of fish that actually, it's called, they bioaccumulate these toxins in their fatty tissue. They absorb the toxins, they eat other critters that have absorbed the toxins, and the toxins build up in the flesh and the fatty tissue of the fish. So when people catch those fish and go to eat them, they are in fact ingesting the toxins that the fish flesh is harboring.
And those are generally fish that are a little higher up on the food chain, as it were, that eat a lot of other fish and those, that type of thing accumulates. But I'm looking at the article in which we found you, and I see things like, you know, the state recommends that eating only one meal of weak fish from a bay per month, or that the state advisor for bluefish recommending one meal a year of fish over 14 inches. I mean, that's scary.
It's very scary. And in fact, it's not a problem that's necessarily getting better. As I said, toxic pollution is not just an ongoing problem for the Delaware River, but it's a growing problem for the Delaware River. For example, PCBs, which can cause cancer, it's dangerous for reproduction and could cause birth defects and liver damage. PCBs were largely banned many, many years ago, decades ago. And so people think that PCBs are no longer discharged into the main stem river and aren't a concern. But in fact, there are legacy PCBs that are in the river system, in the sediments, in the water columns, get washed off of the land whenever it rains into the river. But we also have...
Hold on a second, Maya, we're going to have to take a short break. We'll come right back after the commercial, and we'll talk about the recurring problem of PCBs there and what the impact this has on the food source of the river. We're talking with Maya Van Rossum, the Delaware River Keeper, about the Delaware River here in Jersey and Pennsylvania and Delaware. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagut and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Maya Van Rossum. She's the Delaware River Keeper. And we're here talking about you were saying before the break that the problem of PCBs in the river, even though PCBs have been banned for years, is increasing. And the source of those PCBs is PCBs that were out there already that are what do you call them, legacy PCBs?
Well, it's really a combination. We have PCBs that are in the river system itself. We have PCBs that were used historically that are still harbored on the land, and so when it rains, the PCBs literally get washed with sediments into the river. But we also have companies that still have the legal right to discharge PCBs into our Delaware River,
but wait a second,
and thereby contaminate our fish.
And you think that's a bad idea?
But I thought they were banned.
Well, they're, like I said, they're largely banned, but there are still incidental creation of PCBs, and there are still certain limited situations in which nearly 100 companies that operate on the Delaware estuary, that's from Trenton down, mm-hmm. that are legally entitled to discharge PCBs into, again, it's into our river, not their river, but our river and our fish.
Talk to us about what kinds of companies those are.
Well, it's really a large variety of companies. We have companies like DuPont, who also, by the way, wants to discharge VX nerve agent waste into our Delaware River.
Yeah, I want to talk about that after the news, but that was a big one. I heard you're against that, but let's talk about the PCBs that are incidental that are getting sent out into our river.
Right. We have companies like the Philadelphia Water Department that is a pass through for PCBs, Delcora, U.S. Steel, Valero Refining, Boeing Corporation.
And are there ways for them to handle these PCBs if they were to spend a little more money that they could not release them into the river?
Well, I guess it depends who you talk to, but that's certainly my position. And there is an ongoing effort right now to secure needed regulations to ratchet down these discharge of PCBs, whether they're intentional or accidental, Delaware River.
Our guest is Maya Van Rossum. She's the Delaware River Keeper and has been the leader for the Delaware River Keeper Network since 1996. And we're talking to her about our multi-state, big and beautiful Delaware River and some of the fish that come out of it and why you can't eat them. We'll be back after the news talking more with her. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Our guest today is Maya Van Rossum. She has been the Delaware Riverkeeper and leader of the Delaware Riverkeeper Network since 1996, and we're talking about the Delaware River here in Jersey. And we've just learned, and I was unaware of this until I read about you and we brought you on the show, that companies are still able to... Some companies are still able to discharge PCBs into the public river, which poisons the fish, of course. But there was an issue where DuPont wanted to put VX nerve gas in the river. What was that all about?
Well, there is a stockpile of VX nerve agent in Indiana, and the Army and DuPont would like to truck that about 2 truckloads a day over a period of 2 years. They want to truck that VX nerve agent waste across the country, across several states, down through New Jersey, bring it to the DuPont Chambers Works, where they will do a little bit of additional treatment and then discharge it into our Delaware River. This VX nerve agent waste, which is called VX hydrolysate, can include actual VX nerve agent in it, up to 20 parts per billion, as well as other substances that are as toxic as, or in some cases, more toxic than actual VX nerve agent.
Well, I have some other thoughts of where we should be putting that VX agent.
Well, the real sick thing about this is there is a solution for how to treat this this VX nerve agent waste on site in Indiana at the very safe and secure Army Depot there. The residents that live around where this waste is stored believe themselves that this nerve agent waste should not be shipped anywhere else, but should be treated and disposed of on-site in Indiana, where they think that it can be treated much more safely. And, of course, from our perspective, where our communities and our river and our ecosystems are not subjected to this nerve agent waste being needlessly discharged into our Delaware.
Well, I got a question for you. Why don't they dump it in their own damn river? You know, I mean, if there's no problem with it, why don't they dump it in the Mississippi? Do they got to truck it to New Jersey? They got to go over the Mississippi to get here. Why don't they just, you know, dump it there?
Well, that's the really sick part of this is they don't need to. They have a process that was approved of and even partially funded to treat and dispose of this stuff in Indiana. The residents in Indiana are our best partners in fighting DuPont and fighting the Army and getting this stuff to stay in Indiana for treatment and disposal. But it's the Army and DuPont that's fighting the Indiana residents and the residents of New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware, and is trying to push this VX nerve agent waste onto our communities and on our river. And again, it's needless. They have another process that was agreed to, that was approved by all, and that has, in fact, been partially funded.
So
Army and DuPont want to subject us to this danger.
Why do you think? I mean, logically, what you're saying doesn't make any sense. Why go through the effort and the expense, frankly, of shipping it here when you could dispose of it right where it is now?
Well, they've got many, many excuses, but really when it comes down to it, it's dollars and politics.
It's cheaper to dump it in the Delaware River than it is to treat it? Is that the
issue? I wouldn't even say that that's accurate.
Huh.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be cheaper. The question is, who's going to be benefiting from those dollars?
I see.
And that we have certainly lots of reasons why we believe they're pushing this forward. They have lots of excuses as to why they're doing it. The fact of the matter is they don't need to bring the VX nerve agent waste to DuPont and to dump it into our Delaware River. There's another, better, safer, more environmentally safe way to take care of this stuff on site in Indiana, and even the Indiana residents think that's the best way to handle this problem.
So who stands to benefit from something like that?
Well, I mean, you know, you're talking about the Army and you're talking about DuPont, so I think that the ones that are benefiting are them, and DuPont, I think, ends up the big winner. And I think that the thing that's most scary is we don't think that it's going to stop this way. DuPont has already treated mustard gas hydrolysate. We think DuPont is trying to set themselves up as the big recipient of nerve agent and chemical agents from all over the country for treatment and disposal. So we don't think that this is going to stop with mustard gas or VX nerve agent waste. We think DuPont is looking big picture down the line, and they want chemical weapons from all over the country to be brought to New Jersey for treatment and disposal in our Delaware River. So it's a really scary thought.
You know, I remember that the commercial that DuPont came out with years ago after Silent Spring was published, and the commercial and the chemical companies did this big blitz about how, you know, chemicals are good for you. And I remember the old slogan they would use in the commercial. They'd, like, show children in a park playing on a plastic swing set, and they'd say, chemicals. Without chemicals, life itself would be impossible. We could do without the VX Nerd.
Yeah, exactly. H2O, a different chemical, different compound.
It also strikes me that it would be very dangerous to send two trucks a day for 2 years across the country to have all that VX. If it's all in one place and safe and secure, I mean, trucks get in accidents. People can attack trucks. People can steal trucks. People can, you know, blow up trucks on purpose. You know, that just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me to move it if you cannot move it.
All of the risks that you just mentioned are there. And the thing that's most ridiculous is that when the Army, one of the claims the Army has made is that, well, we need to do this in order to take care of this stuff more quickly. And but yet they never did an analysis for the possibility for sabotage, because all of the constituents to actually create VX nerve agent are in this hydrolysate stuff and under the right conditions, if intentionally created, in fact, could be used to reform VX nerve agent. But they never did an analysis for the potential for sabotage. And essentially what they seem to be claiming is that it's safer to truck this stuff across country, two truckloads a day over a period of 2 years, without any guards or anything, than it is to keep this stuff on a secure Army depot in Indiana, where presumably you have Army personnel all over the place to protect it and keep it safe.
Wow.
It's an absurd argument. The fact is, we don't need it. We don't want it. They do not have to do it this way. The citizens of New Jersey are the ones that have to stop it.
Our guest is Maya von Rossum. She's been the Delaware River keeper since 1996, and this is her job right here to talk to people about threats to the Delaware River. Hey, Maya, just on the off chance that some of our listeners don't want VX Nerve Agent to go in the Delaware River, if they wanted to call your organization or get in touch with you online, how do they do that?
Well, they can go to DelawareRiverKeeper.org. Our website, and we have lots of ways for them to get involved on this issue and with our organization and other really important threats and issues facing the Delaware. Or they could call our hotline at 1-800-8-DELAWARE.
Well, you know, now, if you're out there and you're listening and you think that putting VX nerve agent waste in the Delaware River is a good idea, don't call Maya. But if you think it's a bad idea, you can call Maya.
Anyway. I think that one of the things I want to backtrack on a little bit. One of the things that Maya has said here is that the local people, the indigenous people of Indiana, are for not moving this off the compound and tracking it across the country.
But DuPont is for cashing a big check and moving it across the country. I just want to talk to you about, talk to people about, so they know the state of the Delaware. In addition to some of the other restrictions, the state continues its recommendation of eating no fin fish caught in waters from the Pennsylvania-Delaware state line to the C&D Canal near Wilmington, Delaware. For American eel, channel catfish, white perch caught in rivers and waters north of this area to Trenton, it's recommended that high-risk groups refrain from eating these types of fish, and others limit consumption to 4 meals per year. You can only have 4 meals a year from the river
now. So you might live on the Delaware River, be able to fish there every day, and only be able to eat 4 fish a year out of it? Is that possible?
That's the case. I mean, it's not illegal to eat more, but you're certainly putting your health and your families at risk. And the reality is that we don't just have recreational and commercial anglers on the river, but we have subsistence anglers. We have folks that fish in this Delaware River and catch these fish and serve it to their families because they have to. Otherwise, they wouldn't have enough food on the table for their families. Hmm. So there are a lot of people that don't have the choice not to subject themselves to these dangers.
Well, Maya, when we come back, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, I want to talk about some of the fun things we can do on the Delaware River and some of the positive things that are going on and how people can go and really enjoy it, because it is a very, if you live in the area and you haven't been down, it's beautiful from way north to way south over 4 states. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest is Maya Van Rossum. She's the Delaware Riverkeeper. And we're talking about the state of the Delaware overall. Now, the Delaware is a beautiful place and a very important place for migratory birds, is it not?
Absolutely. There is an annual migration every spring that takes place with birds from South America. They fly along the Delaware River in order to go to their breeding grounds in the Arctic at exactly this time of year. The Delaware Bay is one of their primary stopovers. They come to the Delaware Bay, a number of these species, particularly the red knot, in order to feast themselves, to gorge themselves on the horseshoe crab eggs that are laid on the bay shores. When they arrive here, they've flown literally 3,000 to 4,000 miles nonstop, and they're starving. They've used up all their body fat, their lean, some of their lean body mass, their organs have shrunk. They come here, and within a period of a week to 10 days, they feast themselves on these horseshoe crab eggs in order to double their body weight so they can fly another 3,000 to 4,000 miles nonstop to their breeding grounds. If there are not enough eggs when they reach the Delaware Bay stopover, these birds, particularly the red knot, are unable to reach their breeding grounds.
So why wouldn't there be,
are at risk.
Why wouldn't there be enough eggs?
Well, unfortunately, the crabs are being over-harvested and have been over-harvested for many, many decades. And so we don't have enough crabs to produce the level of eggs needed to sustain all of these birds. And as a result, the red knot is predicted by international experts to potentially go extinct by the year 2010. The state of New Jersey is taking very important action. They are issuing a moratorium to prevent the continuing harvest of horseshoe crabs over the next 2 years in order to allow the populations to rebound.
Mm-hmm.
The Atlantic State Marine Fisheries Council had an opportunity just this week to also implement a moratorium that would take effect in Delaware, New Jersey, and Maryland and Virginia, and they declined to take that very strong action. Instead, they're reducing the allowable harvest, but we don't believe by enough in order to protect the crabs and to protect the birds.
Amazing. Horseshoe crabs are one of the animals that have been on the planet the longest as well.
They've been here since before the dinosaurs, and the largest population of horseshoe crabs in the world has historically been in Delaware Bay. They're also important to the biomedical industry, who bleeds them non-lethally. They don't bleed them dry,
mm-hmm.
but they bleed them in order to gain their blood to provide critical testing on medical devices and vaccines. And these are tests that are required by the FDA. And the only way you can get the component necessary to run these tests is through the blood of the horseshoe crab. You can't make it synthetically, and you can't get it anywhere else.
Yeah, I always thought that was really neat.
Now, you're talking about a species of bird that could be extinct in 4 years, and that doesn't cause the Mid-Atlantic Council to
react,
to put a moratorium on that. That's crazy, isn't it?
It's absolutely crazy. I mean, we have international experts. The eyes of the world are literally upon us, mm-hmm. and we're coming up short. But thankfully, the state of New Jersey isn't, and the state of New Jersey has taken state action to put in place a moratorium to prevent the bait harvest. What they do is they harvest these crabs, cut them up, and use them as bait in order to catch eel and conch, which to a large extent are sent overseas for eating purposes.
All right, now let's talk. We've been talking about how the river's in danger, but I mean, it is a beautiful river. I mean, a lot of people use this river for recreation as well as subsistence.
I've been canoeing and rafting on the river several times myself. Love it. Gone camping around the Delaware. It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Are more and more people using the river than have been in the past?
Absolutely. I mean, we have people who come from all over the country and all over the world. Many come to watch the spectacular arrival and feasting of these migratory shorebirds. If you want to see that, now is the time of year to see that, to watch the horseshoe crabs come up, lay the eggs, and to watch the birds gorge themselves. And you can have literally a half to two-thirds of an entire population or species on the beaches of the Delaware Bay in any given day. That's why if we have an oil spill at this time of year, it's so incredibly dangerous to so many.
So you mean you can have two-thirds of all of the two-thirds of that particular creature, of all the ones that exist, can be on the bay at a moment?
Yes, in a given day. They've counted that. And it's a spectacular arrival. The number of birds that you see, and they're so beautiful, it's just absolutely incredible. You can go down to South Jersey. You can go down to the state of Delaware. You can watch this fabulous occurrence. And then you can take the opportunity to enjoy the beaches along the Delaware Bay, which are fabulous. You can watch the porpoises swim through. It's really a spectacular place to go throughout the spring and summer months. The upper Delaware is fantastic for canoeing. Actually, from above the water gap all the way up in New York down to Washington Crossing,
Mark,
the Delaware is largely designated as wild and scenic. It's
Mark
spectacular.
Mark and I have done that a number of times. It's really great. Now, can people also go to your website and find out about some of the fun things to do?
Well, we do have some of that information there, but we're primarily an advocacy organization that is fighting to save the river so people can enjoy it.
You do tremendous work, Maya. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. I just wanted to thank you for coming to talk to us on the show. And we're going to link your website to ours at restaurantguysradio.com if you want to find out about the Delaware Riverkeeper Network. It's an important organization for food and as well as for keeping our planet in one piece. So thanks again for coming on the show, Maya.
Thank you so much for caring so much about the river. Appreciate it.
We do. How could you not? How could you not? We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis at Stage Left at Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And Mark and I have had many great times on the Delaware River, both together and separately.
Right now, I'm thinking too many.
Our guest was Maya Van Rossum of she's the Delaware River Keeper. I will always remember. Well, first of all, I want to make a recommendation. In the town of New Hope, Pennsylvania, and Lambertville, New Jersey, straddle the river, and there's a bridge that connects the two. And New Hope's a great town to go visit and walk around. And in Lambertville, New Jersey, one of my favorite dining experiences in this state is to go to Hamilton's Grill Room, mm-hmm. which has been there forever. And it's a BYO place. The food is very good. It's very simple. It's very laid back.
And it's just off of the Delaware.
But it's sort of hidden. You got to find it. It's in the old pork yard. And it's just a beautiful place. And right across from it is my favorite bar in New Jersey. It's called the Boathouse. Really wonderful, wonderful place. So there's a recommendation for you.
One of the things I really love about the Boathouse is it's its own little enclave. You're in your own little bar, and it's got like four seats at the main bar, and then a little couch and lounge area downstairs. And then you go upstairs, and there's another little bar there where you can sit. And it's very personal and private, and if you go there with a group of three or four people or even on a date, it's really, really intimate, and you get to really be in touch with the people that you're out with.
And you can walk out, and you can walk across the ridge and walk across the river, and it's very intimately connected. And actually, if you in the summertime, you can sit outside. There's a little canal that runs right behind mm-hmm. the Hamilton's Grill Room. I really like it. It's a really nice little community. And they also have the Shad Festival. When the Shad come up, there's the Shad. You're going to get Shad Row. Disgusting.
We missed that already this year.
I hate Shad Row. But
not a big fan of Shad.
But I like the festival. It's really great.
I'm more of a festival guy than a Shad
exactly.
guy.
Well, anyway, if you want to get in touch and do your part to help keep the Delaware River alive or find out more about it, you can go visit the Riverkeeper Network.
Network.
You can find them on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.